Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for July 24th, 2017. This is David Corey, along with my co-host, Richard Hurley. Thank you for joining us this evening. Hello, Richard.
Good evening, David, and welcome to our listeners this evening to another show for veterans and their families. I want to remind our listeners that this is a call-in show that welcomes your views, comments, and questions, so you can call us at any time during the show. The phone number is 1-888-627-6008. Again, that's 1-888-627-6008. Back to you, David.
And before we update our listeners with some veteran news and then bring on our special guest tonight, Mr. Theodore Stevens, I would like to recognize and thank the sponsors of tonight's show, American Legion's John F. Murphy Post 303 of Bonita Springs, Florida, Mr. Charles M. Newman of Florida, and Corey and Hurley Law Group, which represents veterans and disability cases and military personnel actions. Over to you, Richard.
Thank you, David. And we have our What's New in D.C., which is our report about what's happening up there in Washington. Last week, the VA Secretary Dr. David Shulkin announced that the VA is taking immediate action to respond to whistleblower concerns about the Manchester, New Hampshire VA Medical Center after a Boston Globe article on July 15th reported on many problems affecting the care of veterans in New Hampshire. According to the Boston Globe article, one operating room has been abandoned since last October because exterminators couldn't get rid of the flies. Doctors had to cancel surgeries in another ward last month after they discovered what appeared to be rust or blood on two sets of surgical instruments that were supposedly sterile. In addition, the paper reported thousands of patients, including some with life-threatening conditions, struggled to get any care at all because the program for setting up appointments with outside specialists had broken down. What is particularly ironic is that the Manchester VA hospital had received a four-star rating just last year by the VA, which is the second highest rating on the 1-5 scale. Boston Globe also reported that so far 11 physicians and medical employees, including the hospital's retiring chief of medicine, former chief of surgery, and former chief of radiology, have contacted a federal whistleblower agency and the Globe Spotlight team to say the Manchester VA is endangering patient. The U.S. Office of the Special Counsel, the whistleblower agency, has already found a substantial likelihood of legal violations, gross mismanagement, abuse of authority, and a danger to public health, according to a January letter to one of the doctors who alleged the wrongdoing. Dr. Stuart Levinson, chief of medicine and 18-year veteran of the hospital, who is among the whistleblowers, said, and I quote, "I have never seen a hospital run this poorly. Every day it gets worse and worse. I never thought I would be exposing the system like this. But what I went through, the system and got nowhere." In response to those and other concerns, the VA has announced that the VA Office of the Medical Inspector and the VA Office of Accountability and Whistleblower Protection are conducting a top-to-bottom review of the Manchester VA Medical Center. In addition, effective immediately, the department has removed the director and chief of staff at the facility, pending the outcome of the review. Alfred Montoya, the director of VAMC in White River Junction, Vermont, will serve as the new director of the Manchester VAMC, and the new chief of staff will be announced shortly. VA Secretary Shulkin said, and I quote, These are serious allegations, and we want our veterans and our staff to have confidence in the care we're providing. I have been clear about the importance of transparency, accountability, and rapid fixing any and all problems brought to our attention, and we will do so immediately with these allegations. In other news, the Veterans Affairs Committee of the U.S. House of Representatives voted last week to forward 11 bills to the full House for a vote. According to a committee press release from this past Wednesday, the 11 bills will improve VA's ability to hire and retain quality medical professionals, address issues with VA's procurement process, and expand veterans' access to mental health care, as well as improve and extend the GI Bill for educational benefits. Specifically, the educational benefits with bill would remove time restrictions to use the GI Bill, enabling future eligible recipients to use their GI Bill benefits for their entire lives. It also provides significant increases in GI Bill funding for reservists and guardsmen, dependents, surviving spouses, and surviving dependents. Provides 100% GI Bill eligibility to post 9/11 Purple Heart recipients, and restores eligibility for service members whose school closes in the middle of the semester, and creates a pilot program that would pay for veterans to take certain high technology courses. Details of the legislation can be found on the committee's website, which is veterans.house.gov. Again, that's veterans.house.gov. Similar legislation on the educational benefits was also introduced in the Senate this past week, where it already has 39 co-sponsors. And that's what's new in D.C. Okay, back to you, David.
Thank you, Richard. Now, our special guest tonight is Theodore A. Stevens, Sr., the president and CEO of Veterans Helping Veterans of America, a nonprofit organization based in Durham, North Carolina. Welcome, Mr. Stevens. How are you tonight?
Fine. Thank you very much for inviting me. I certainly appreciate this opportunity.
Well,
let me
privilege.
First say, I want to thank you guys for what you do. It's very important to our veterans, and you're doing a wonderful job.
Thank you, sir. We thank you for what you're doing for veterans and your leadership. Could you start off by telling us about yourself and what led you to get involved in veterans issues?
Well, I'm a disabled U.S. Air Force veteran, when I retired, I found by going through the VA a lot of bureaucracy, and there was not enough information out there. We're a 501c3 nonprofit agency, and we are all volunteers. No one gets paid here. And what we do is we have an informational resource center for our veterans, providing them with knowledge of where the resources are located so they can take advantage of them.
Oh, that's great. And by the way, I'm an Air Force veteran myself, and during my active duty years, I spent several years at a base not far from you, Seymour Johnson in Goldsboro. I'm sure you're familiar with that.
Yes, quite a bit. Well,
yeah, it was one of my favorite assignments. I really love that area, too, in North Carolina. Just some of the greatest people in the country, just so friendly, and I just really enjoyed my time there in North Carolina. Can you tell us a bit more about the history of your organization, Veterans Helping Veterans of America? A bit about its history and perhaps some of its current specific projects.
Right now, we started in 2009 as a resource center for our veterans. And when we opened up our website, we were just starting for the RTP area, Raleigh-Durham area. But when we opened up our websites, I started getting calls from all over the country. So I had to open it up for everybody. So that way we would give you the information you need to get housing, medical care, social services, state benefits, veterans benefits. As you know, when you in the military, it's very structured.
Yeah.
You either go to your NCOIC or your commander. Between the two of them, they could get the job done. But once you get out, the bureaucracy of the government is overwhelming.
Oh, yeah.
And you get so confused as to who to talk to. So that's when I started to think, well, let me provide the information to them that they need wherever they are to get housing, to get medical care, to get the social services that the state provides, also to let them know the benefits that they're entitled to. We have a lot of female veterans, and in the course of time, they didn't really know they were veterans. So we had to acquaint them with their status. So we decided to do a informational resource center. And we have an office here in Durham. This is our headquarters. We're presently, as we speak, trying to open up an office in Kentucky and one in Chicago, Illinois.
That's great.
And so we're doing the best we can. We provide some resources here. We have a personnel office for local employment. We have a social services department that can let you know what the state can provide for you. And also, we can tell them what they can get from the VA, how they can get it, and what is required, because there's so many different things. If you served less than 2 years, you don't get the benefits that someone who served for more than 2 years or during a wartime period. So a lot of veterans don't know that. They just think that they got an honorable discharge and they're entitled to some benefits, so we have to help them out any way we can. We have a food bank because veterans get food stamps, but they can't buy cooked food. So what we do provide for the homeless veteran is a kitchen to where he can come in and cook whatever food he'd like to have, and we have some little plastic cartons that he can put it in.
That's
and,
great.
And keep with him.
That's
and
great
we have,
for you.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
We have our arts and crafts studio, fully equipped arts and crafts studio, where our veterans come in and they're able, those with PTSD are able to find some calming effect and some camaraderie here while they participate.
Let me ask you about that art, if I could, because we've, in the last several months on our show, we've had a number of veterans who found therapy through music, through films, through writing, and through artwork. And I think it's great that your organization, Veterans Helping Veterans of America, actually has a specific project for that. And I saw on your website, which I want to highlight for our listeners too, is vhva.org. Mr. Stevens, I saw that there's a lot of very impressive artwork, ceramics, but also paintings and other things.
Yes, we encourage them to come in, and if nothing else, but a lot of guys with PTSD want to be alone, and we encourage them to come in and be with their buddies so that they have somebody who knows what they're talking about.
Yeah, you know. And have you had... what sort of, do you have classes or anything about artwork or ceramics? Are you planning on doing that sort of thing?
We presently have a class that will benefit 18 veterans with ceramics, porcelain, painting. We do have a couple of instruments here. We got an organ, a piano, and a clarinet. We're in on a trumpet so that they can play. And but mostly we want to get to them as to what's eating them inside. And, you know, there's a lot of illnesses, and not all of them are physical.
Right.
There are a lot of mental illnesses that they have to deal with. And that can be overwhelming at some time, and you just need somebody to talk to.
Right. Well, let me ask you this, because I mentioned before, there's a big, as you well know, there's a big military presence in North Carolina. I was stationed at Seymour Johnson Air Force Base. When I was later in the reserves, I did a lot of reserve duty, a number of 2-week tours at Pope Air Force Base. I think it's now Pope Field, but it's associated, as you well know, at Fort Bragg. And then the Marine Corps has a huge presence over on the east side of the state, Camp Lejeune and some other smaller installations. Being that you're there, kind of the central part of North Carolina, Raleigh, Durham area, what have you seen that might be, what are the veterans' issues and needs that you see there in that area?
Well, most of the, as I said, when you're in the military, you have a structure. You have your NCOIC or your commanding officer. But when you're getting out of the military, all you have is bureaucracy. A lot of veterans don't know where to go or who to talk to. And that's what we provide here. Our database allows us to tell them exactly who they should talk to, the person in charge, what nonprofits are in their area that could help them, that get government grants specifically for veterans, especially through the SSVF program, and also with what is the name of that? Getting old, getting the name of the company. But there are a lot of things like Volunteers of America where they can get help. And so what we do, no matter where you are, we can Google a place or a nonprofit to where you can get the help. But first we have to find out what your needs are, and then we can start searching for the resources that you need to, you know, steady your life, get back on your feet, or help you understand the process that you'll have to go through as a civilian.
That's great. Now, how can our listeners help your organization, in turn, help veterans? I know you mentioned earlier that you're expanding to offices in Kentucky and hopefully in Chicago as well. What can our listeners do to help your organization, perhaps in terms of financial donations? How can they do that? If they're in your geographic area in North Carolina, can they volunteer or if they're in Kentucky or Chicago? Tell us about that, if you would.
Well, if they're in our area, the main thing that we need is the human touch, the volunteer to come in, especially other veterans and retired veterans that have time on their hands and can't help out. We have on our website, PayPal, where you can make a donation to continue the services that we provide here. As I said, we're a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization. So all donations go, 100% of it goes to helping a veteran.
Oh, that's wonderful. That is wonderful. We've talked about the art gallery and your programs to help veterans with PTSD through artwork. Can you tell us perhaps a bit more about the employment information resources? Because employment, we've represented a lot of veterans, and a lot of them have had great difficulty in making that transition from active duty, you know, to civilian life, despite their training and their discipline and all that. Sometimes it's because they're suffering from physical disabilities or PTSD. Any thoughts, any things you can share with us about that on the employment area?
Well, what we do here is we have a person in our human resources department who will take their resume and convert it from their military experience to civilian experience.
Ah, that's great.
And that way we rewrite it, because a lot of veterans come in, they have three-page resumes, and today's market, they only want you to have one page. So you have to be careful with how you put your experiences and lessons that you've learned on paper. So we do that for them. We also have a computer system here. Well, we have 10 laptop computers where we let the veteran go online and apply for a job. And then once he applies, we call that company and ask them to take his name from the queue to the top so that he could get an interview. And that way he goes from being obscured at the bottom of that queue to right at the top, because most of the time the people will say, okay, you have a Sergeant Jones, I'll go look him up and I'll pull his resume for him.
Very good. That's up. Now I'm going to turn over to my co-host Richard Hurley, because I know Richard has some questions for you as well. Richard.
How you doing tonight?
Oh, I'm hanging in there.
my son-in-law is currently stationed at Johnson Air Force.
Seymour Johnson?
Yeah. My daughter, and they just had their third child, and they're he lives there, and he's training pilots in the flying F-15.
Oh, that's great.
He was flying missions there for a while, and now he's a trainer. As a father-in-law and a grandfather, I'm kind of glad he's grounded.
Now, well, My grandson just got out in the Army. He was stationed at Fort Hood, Texas. He was a lucky guy. He got to spend his whole enlistment at Fort Hood. So he's home now, and he's having the same difficulty as most veterans, finding a job, getting his housing straight, his school reimbursements in. So we've been trying to help him and steer him in the right direction, and I think it's coming along pretty good.
That's great.
Theodore, I got a couple of questions here. I was listening to what Dave was talking about with the art and those programs. What are some of the projects that you all are doing to help veterans transition back into civilian life?
Well, what we try to do is, the first thing we try to do with a veteran is find out where he's living. And then we try to educate his community about how to approach him and how he will react to you. A lot of civilians, you know, I get a little tired sometimes when people say, thank you for your service. Do you know how many times I answer that a day? Probably 300. Yeah. But if you put your hand out and shake his hand, that human touch means a lot more than just thank you for your service. So we try to educate our community, and especially when he's shopping, you know, you don't need to, because he's a veteran or you think he's a veteran, you don't need to approach him like he's any different from anybody else. Let him ask for help before you try to help him.
Yeah, that's for sure. I tell people all the time when they ask what can they do to help veterans, and they talk about donating money here and donating money there, and then they get worried that the money's not going to get to the veteran, as we see happen so often. A lot of times I suggest, you know, if you see a veteran, or a gal having dinner, pick up the tab.
There you go.
Go over and say thank you for your service, sir, and grab the tab and say thank you. Cause, you know, it's that affirmation I found. It means so much to these veterans. Do you find that?
I find that very much so. I mean, I am, like I said, we do a lot of community work and events during the summer. But it gets so cold in the winter that we cannot do those events or raise money. So basically, I have to take my veterans pension and my Social Security retirement to keep the doors open until summer of the next year. Been doing that for 8 years now. And it's very pleasing when I can say, you know, a veteran comes in and tells me he's hungry and I can feed him, or he's homeless and I can find him an apartment. Probably get some furniture for that apartment. And more so when he comes in and he just wants to get something off his chest, I'm here to listen because I know what he's been through and what's facing him out there as a civilian.
How do you find, you know, our young veterans, the veterans coming home from Iraq and Afghanistan, are you finding them, you know, obviously, there's a need to help them, but what I find in my representation in our law practice is that we still tend to cater more to the older veteran, helping them get their compensation or whatever other things that they need. And I keep beating the drum, telling these older veterans, you know, you got to get these younger guys and younger women in the door. I mean, do you run into that same issue?
Well, yeah, we find that the older veteran that who has been out of the military for a while has come around to the point where he knows he has to ask for help. The younger veteran seems to think, well, you know, I was self-sufficient and I could do my job while I was in the service, so I should be able to, you know, take care of myself when I get out. But what we provide for the younger veteran is information on how to get around the bureaucracy he's going to face. The older veteran probably has some knowledge, if not a great deal of knowledge, of what he's going to get out of the VA or what the Veterans Administration is going to do for him. But the younger veterans, sometimes they don't even know that, you know, like simple things like you should have a copy of your military records and your medical records with you, and one copy someplace else where you can get to it, because a lot of veterans, they start to go and they say, well, I can't find your record. And then we ask, you have to tell them, look, you know, even though you probably got out and you've got TRICARE or that, you still need to go to the VA hospital and get your VA card and get a primary care physician. The TRICARE will take care of your family, but the VA will take care of your medical needs without having to pay. And so we do that for them, but in younger veterans, sometimes they don't know that, well, I'm renting now, and that's all he's concerned with, but somewhere down the line, he's going to want to buy a home. So he needs to get his loan papers for the VA as soon as he gets out, instead of having to try to search and research it 3 or 4 years down the line. So we try to get them and bring them up to date with the benefits that they're entitled to now and in the future, and get them to get into the system. You have to get into the system, and the best way for that is to go and get your VA card at the VA Medical Center.
Well, that's all great stuff. You know, I sometimes when I'm speaking to veterans groups, especially the younger veterans, I try to hit home and remind them how much money that they're leaving on the table.
Yes.
Because I'm convinced that, you know, we've got actuaries in the VA system who know exactly how many of these veterans are going to come home from Iraq and Afghanistan, who are going to file claims for compensation, who are going to accept a lowball rating by the VA. So I keep telling them, you know, you got to keep appealing in order to, you know, don't leave the money on the table. Do you find that an issue?
That's quite a bit of an issue because, as I said, when you're in the military, you're used to following orders. And as a new veteran coming out into civilian life, you go to the VA and they say, hey, you know, this is the way it is, you accept it. When it's not the way it is, they're not explaining it to you the right way. So you need to look further into it, refile your claim, but make sure that when you go to the VA to file a claim, that you know that the VA does not pay for pain. If you're in pain, they'll just give you some pills. But they will pay for range of motion. So if you don't have the same range of motion you had when you went in, that's a viable claim. You can't walk a long way. You can't sit a long time. Or, you know, you're just having nightmares. And things like that will get your benefits through faster. But if you just say, you know, my back is killing me, well, they'll give you some pain pills, and at least, you know, they even go as far as try to operate on your back, which I just suggest nobody does that. And they get second opinions, third opinions. A lot of VA employees really don't know the rules or the regulations, so they make them up as they go. And if you accept it as fact, you're going to lose out. So you have to make them explain to you. Because I always say, when you go there and they tell you something or they tell you no, ask them to explain to you why not. Because you're entitled, and why are they denying you? And get an in-depth explanation so that when you file, you'll know what you're talking about.
You know, that's interesting. You said when they tell you no, and then you immediately said that the veteran needs to then say, well, why no? That to me seems to be the hardest question that these veterans have at that point. Because when they hear no, and this is based upon my experience dealing with veterans, when they hear no, they see the wall go up and they turn around and they walk away. They come back to me and I'll ask them what happened. And they'll say, well, they told me no. They told me I wasn't entitled. And I said, what'd you do then? I turned around and left.
Now, that's a critical issue for, especially for the younger veterans coming out. We do have, the older veterans seem to communicate with each other more as to the VA and what you need to do to get through this. The younger generation don't seem to quite have the information they need in hand, and that's what we provide here for them, the information you need at hand. You have to make sure that what you're talking about or whatever ailment or a disability you might have must be in your medical records at the VA, because that's the one that they go to look and to see to make their decision on whether they're going to compensate you for it. You just can't go into the doctor's office and talk to him for a few minutes and he not enter that into his computer, into your records, and then come out and say, well, I told the doctor that I couldn't use my wrist, but it's not in your medical records. You have to make sure your doctor puts that in your records so that when you do make your claim, you have some substantiating evidence as to your injury.
This is all great stuff. I'm so glad to hear your organization is doing all this. Now, you seem to, you can't be a one-man show over there. So how big is the organization? How many guys or women do you have helping you out?
Well, we totally depend on our community and veterans. What I do here is I have on and off volunteers. Our human resources person is always available if we need her to rewrite a resume or as far as letting them put their resume online. We get it written and then we put it online here for them ourselves. Also, I have an admin officer who takes care of all our legal and paperwork because we want to stay legal and we want to be right when we say something. And we have an artist that comes in to help us with our arts and crafts. We're presently opening up a gift shop where the veterans can sell their arts and crafts. And we have a art gallery where they can display their arts and crafts. So there are veterans who are helpers, and there's veterans who are willing to move forward. And we have a great response from our community in helping us put all this together.
Do you have any functions during the year?
Well, what we do from March through August, we do events at different merchants here in our area, such as Sam's Club, which is a very good event for us in Morrisville, and we do the Walmart, and we do different merchants here doing fundraising events to help us with the funds we need to just get through the summer. And because everything we do for veterans free, we don't charge him for anything, no matter what it is.
Do you have to do any grant writing?
I don't like to. You know, grants are okay, but grants are specific things. And when a veteran comes into our office, and if he says, "Look, I need some money to help me get my security deposit for my apartment," and I've got $10,000 sitting over here for somebody who has to, for rent or something else, I mean, for food or whatever, you can't use that money to just do a different thing. And so in order to be prepared for the veteran when he comes in, I really don't do grants that well. I'd rather be able to help him with whatever problem he has when he walks through the door, and not say, well, hey, you know, I have money, but I can't give it to you because it's for such and such, and your problem is not that.
Yeah, there's an organization that David and I work with quite closely, and they have a radio show every Thursday called Vets Helping Vets in Ocala, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And they do, like yourself, they do some great, great stuff, and you know, I'm just, as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking maybe I should, Hank Whittier is the director of that organization. It'd be great to hook you guys up and compare notes, because it just seems like the more information that we can get out there to everybody and let everybody help each other, the better off our veterans are going to be.
Well, that's a unique problem with nonprofits. Everybody likes to garner their own little territory, and I think if we all put ourselves together, we could do a tremendous job with helping veterans across the country with whatever they need as far as food, clothing, housing, medical care, mental health care, and also integrating the veteran into the community where he lives. Because when Johnny left and went off to war, he's not coming back. Johnny's not coming back anymore. He's a different guy.
Right.
Right.
You know, and so you're going to have to approach him in a different way.
You know, David, I think we could be very helpful. Maybe we should do that. You know, get now that we've got a bunch of different groups that have been on the show, circulate an email to each of them with everybody's contact information.
Yeah, that would be great because I'm in Durham, and if there was somebody in Florida that called me because of our website, they call from all over the country, then I can clearly say, well, look, there's an organization there called Vets Helping Vets, and this is their number. You need to call them and see what they can help you out with.
I think this is David again. Let me, if I could just interject. Yeah, the organization in Ocala, the official name is Vets Helping Vets of Marion County. Marion County is in central Florida, kind of north central Florida. It's horse ranching country, kind of more rural. But Ocala is a good sized town, and there's a huge veteran population within about 100 miles of Ocala, both in every direction, 100 miles around. And as you know, Florida has a huge veteran population, probably over a million veterans. But Vets Helping Vets of Marion County would be a good resource, Mr. Stevens, for you to have in Florida, and they're a growing operation as well. And they rely heavily on volunteers, and they've got a weekly 30-minute radio show in Ocala, both AM and FM radio. But our Richard Hurley and I, have this nationwide radio show every Monday with the idea of connecting people across the country, such as yourself, because there are so many veteran groups. We want to share ideas. As you've really emphasized, sharing information is so important for all these things, whether it's employment information, housing, family services,
and
compensation and benefits. Yeah, and educational training, all those sort of things, so we can all work together in helping our veterans and the veterans' families. Back to you, Richard. I'm sorry for interrupting there.
No, that's quite all right, David. I'm just thinking there's also the Winkler Wish Foundation in Crestview, Florida, which deals with PTSD and families who have PTSD veterans.
Suicide prevention.
There are quite a few military nonprofit or veterans organizations around. We just need to get in touch with each other so that we can coordinate our efforts and not just keep going over and over again. Because sometimes when a veteran calls me, if he's from Arkansas, I have to Google it. Okay, where is your social service department? Where is the nearest VA hospital? Have you applied for food stamps? And we actually help the veteran fill out the application for the food stamps and Medicaid. And then we try to get him an appointment because you don't want to go to the social services office and sit there for 4 hours and nobody speaks to you. So a lot of veterans get impatient, they leave, and they don't get the benefit. So we try to arrange an appointment for him so he can be seen when he gets there. And in an hour or so, maybe he's done with it. And he's eligible for Medicaid, he's probably eligible for food stamps, especially if they're homeless and don't have a job. There's so many other benefits. We also have a database of all the food pantries in the country. Wherever you are, I can tell you where there's a food pantry near you where you can get food to feed yourself. And
that's awesome. Yeah.
It's all in the computers, and you just have to do the research. That's our biggest help here. We have a lot of people who will do the research and find out what it is, where it is, and how he can ascertain what he needs. And That's our biggest asset here. We will do the research for the veteran.
I'm going to ask another question. I'm going to hold my breath for the response because I almost cringe. But you're doing such great work. What kind of political support are you getting from your senators and your representatives?
Well, you have one senator down here, state senator, who will do what he can. But unless you're a advocate for that veteran and you have signed up as an advocate, the VA doesn't want to talk to you, okay, because his information is confidential. So, you know, he might say, well, they turn me down. You call, and they say, well, have the veteran call, and you sign up as an advocate, then we can help. We can tell you what it is the problem is. So what we do is we have a form here from the VA which allows the veteran to fill out and make us an advocate for him so that we can directly talk to the people at the VA without them. Of course, I've been at it so long, they can't hoodwink me anymore. You know,
that's good. So, yeah. How would you, Mr. Stevens, if I could ask this question, what are your impressions of the VA facilities, both the benefits side and the medical side there in North Carolina? I'm just interested in hearing kind of the North Carolina experience with the VA.
Well, we have a regional office here, and it's kind of hard to get through. You know, they got that 1-800 number, and you could be sitting there for hours.
Right,
calling back and forth. That had it really needs to be improved. You know, it's like calling the suicide line and somebody says, "Hold on a minute."
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah.
And then we have the VA hospital here in Durham. I had pneumonia, and the service that I got at that hospital was outstanding. Now I love, if I have to be hospitalized, I would go there without hesitation. But to go through the clinic is another story.
An outpatient clinic, and where is that located?
Yeah, that's located at the hospital. But
there's
many people that come through that hospital that a doctor doesn't have enough time to really sit with you and understand what it is you're trying to talk about. You know, like I say, if you tell them you got a pain in your arm, first thing you do is prescribe some kind of medication for you, which may not be what you need. You need to know what's wrong with your arm.
Right.
And so I dread going to the clinic myself. But if I had to be hospitalized, I received excellent service there, and the doctors and the nurses were outstanding. But
Do you hear from veterans that they may be suffering from PTSD? Is your perception or experience in your area, North Carolina, that the VA is very much into, I think you kind of mentioned it earlier, which is just pushing the pills, pushing the medication. Perhaps they're understaffed for the counselors, for the therapists, the psychologists. But do you see that?
The psychiatrists here come from Duke Hospital. Most of the doctors over at the VA come from Duke Hospital, which is right across the street. Now, these are young graduates who've never been shot at, who've never had the thought of somebody trying to kill them every day.
It probably doesn't go over too well with veterans if your experience is like mine. A lot of veterans, they run into that disconnect. The doctors just are clueless. So
it's a disconnect from the very beginning because the doctor has no idea what it's like to spend 2, 3, maybe 4 tours in a combat zone where you know someone is trying to kill you every day, and they know what you look like because you got that uniform on.
Right.
So your head is on a swivel for about 3 years. You missed your family. You missed your kids growing up. And when you go in there and tell him the strain that you're under mentally, he's like, you know, why?
Yeah.
You start to explain to him, he doesn't understand because he's never been ever been assaulted or shot at.
Right.
So it would behoove the VA to hire more military psychiatrists, those who have been in combat zones, those who have been in a war zone, and know the ins and outs and intricacies of that kind of life for a year, 2 years, 3 years. Some guys have been over there 5 years, and that wears on you. That
right.
wears on you every day, and you're not going to forget it. I don't care what they tell you to do or, you know, try to disconnect from it. You can't. It's a part of your life, and it's a part of you.
Right. Well, I think one thing you mentioned just a moment ago, I think is an intriguing idea that needs to get more attention, which is the VA needs to do more to recruit military psychologists, psychiatrists. Richard Hurley and I, on our shows over the last number of months, we have periodically brought to our listeners' attention that the VA is about 45,000 people understaffed, and about 80% of those 45,000 vacancies are on the healthcare side, with thousands of vacancies specifically on the mental health area. And so there's a shortage of psychologists, psychiatrists, therapists, counselors. And there's a big need there. It's apparently been very tough for the VA to recruit, but they need to do something dramatic to get that problem solved.
I think it's a solvable problem. Like I said, I think if you use more military people at the VA, God bless the civilians. They are really helpful as much as they can. But when it comes to mental issues, if you never, walk a mile in my shoes.
Yes.
And then you can tell me what's going on. But if you've never walked in my shoes, how do you understand what I'm doing?
Right.
Or what I'm going through? So, but, as is, you'll find a lot of the VA is handled by civilians. And they just don't, as far as that, on the mental health side, just don't get it. And it hurts the veterans more, because after a while every 22 veterans a day commit suicide.
Yeah,
that's pathetic.
Yeah.
That is absolutely
pathetic. And the
other
problem, that I see, and I think you've alluded to, is that there's an over, because of the shortage of healthcare providers, but also for other reasons. It's kind of the state of medicine today, which is pushing the pills, pushing the medication for the psychiatric issues, which first of all may only cover up the symptoms, not solve the underlying problems, and can have tremendously harmful side effects, short term and long term.
Of course, so we have about just as many addicted veterans to painkillers. And you see, it's easier in the Veterans Administration, because when you run out, all you have to do is pick up the phone and order them over the phone.
And mail them to their house.
Mail
them to their house, so they don't even have to go into the VA. They may have to go in every 6 months or a year just for a five-minute appointment to get their prescription refilled. And away they go. They're not seeing anybody. There's no human touch, as you've mentioned earlier. That's so important. And that's why there's a need for organizations like your organization, because the VA is as vast as it is. There's a lot of gaps in what they're able to do. So I really applaud what you're doing, and I wish you great success. And,
thank you.
If you'd like to remind our listeners again of your organization's website, contact information, how can they contact your organization, how can they make a donation? I just want to get that word out again.
Well, they can go to vhva.org, and that's our website. On it is a symbol for PayPal. You can make your donation, and like I said, 100% of your donation goes to helping a veteran, because we're an all-volunteer organization. And or you can call us at 919-598-9997. That's 919-598-9997. And we're open Monday through Friday, 9 to 5.
Very good. And thank you so much, Mr. Stevens, for being on our show. Richard, any...
Mr. Stevens, thank you very much. And if there's anything that David and I can do for you, Please feel free to contact us. You know, we represent veterans all over the country. So,
I certainly appreciate it.
We'd like to have you back on the show again sometime. Anytime you, you'd like to be back on the show to discuss your programs, your projects, your insights for veterans, we certainly welcome that. So, Mr. Stevens, thank you again. It's been a privilege to have you on our show.
Thank you so much, and keep doing what you're doing. It's a great job.
Thank you, too. God bless.
God bless.
Thank you. Rick, would you like to, I know we've just got a few minutes left, you'd like to talk about the Coaching Into Care program?
Yeah, let me quickly remind our listeners, if you are a family member of a veteran who has left the service and is having a tough time transitioning to civilian life, please be aware of the VA's program called Coaching Into Care. It helps veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life. Returning home can be a tough adjustment, and loved ones can help. Coaching Into Care offers free coaching to help you help your veteran. Give the program a call at toll-free 1-888-823-7458. Its hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Again, the VA's Coaching Into Care number is 1-888-823-7458. Along that same note, I would like to say that if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in a crisis of any kind, the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs also has the Veterans Crisis Line to help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Many veterans have committed suicide because they didn't get the help they needed. Help them get the care they need to cope with their problem. Once again, the Veterans Crisis Line can help. 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. We need to stop this one or 22 suicides a day from our veterans. David?
Yes. Thank you. Thank you, Richard. And one quick update to the news from Washington. Richard, I know one of the bills that you mentioned that went through the House Veterans Affairs Committee last week was the one to expand the GI education benefits. I just got word this evening that the full House of Representatives has passed that bill. So that bill will go on to the Senate, which already has several dozen co-sponsors. So it looks like that bill's on its way to becoming law. It just has to go through the Senate for a vote and then on to the President. So we'll keep you posted on that and other Washington, D.C. Veteran news in our upcoming shows. It's been a quick show. I would really like to thank our special guest tonight, Mr. Theodore Stevens, the President and CEO of Veterans Helping Veterans of America Incorporated. We really appreciate his insight, and we wish him and his organization the greatest success. We'd also like to, again, thank our show sponsors, American Legion's John F. Murphy Post 303 of Bonita Springs, Florida, Mr. Charles Newman of Florida, and Corey and Hurley Law Group. And we'd like to thank our producer here at BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom, for the great job he always does. And we'd like to invite listeners to become show guests, sponsors, and advertisers. Our contact information is on our radio show's website, which is bbsradio.com/the Veterans News Hour. That's bbsradio.com/the Veterans News Hour. You can also find archived podcasts of our prior shows for your benefit. And I'm really pleased to say that over the last 6 months, we've had a great variety of guests on our show, from individual veteran groups to veterans, to veteran advocates, and they're archived there for your benefit. We will be back here on air next Monday evening, the same time, same station. That's our show for tonight, so please tune in next week for another great show. Thanks, Richard.
Thank you, David. Good night.
Good night.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on bbsradio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.